This is number 19 under lobbyist penalty correspondence. Number 19, the case of Taryn Nugent. Not, insofar as I know, a relative of Ted.
I was betting myself on
you. I knew we would.
I couldn't resist.
You
would.
I just
can't resist.
Okay. We're going to have to get even more unpredictable, aren't we? So. Okay. So, Chair, Commissioners, so we have a couple of quarters here, fourth quarter of 2018, and second quarter of 2019. We were just a little late, 2 days on the first one, 4 days on the next one, or 8 days, I'm sorry, on the next one. So what I'm recommending is we give a letter of ed for quarter four, and we drop the penalty down to $50 for quarter two of 2019.
Okay, discussion? Entertain a motion.
So I'm a bit confused on this. So there was an issue in quarter four, and then it looks like quarter one though back on track, right? And then quarter two there's a collapse again. So, but the email only seems to address one of those.
Well, I think that she's talking about the second quarter, not even talking about still having like the first quarter out there. The first quarter's out there. So what we're trying to do is, I mean, the front staff here is trying to go back through folks that are late or whatever, and we get them onto the agenda to get them cleared up, essentially. So she filed that a couple of days late. She didn't do anything about it. Now second quarter. She was late for had these days. I think Kathy called them and said, "Hey, you still had first quarter also. Just clear them all up." Or I'm sorry, fourth quarter also. Uh-huh. Get them all cleared up.
Okay.
So I'm just like I said, I'm trying to give them at least one letter of education for their first offense, and then like I said, I have former Commissioner Larry Campbell in my head, a minimum of $50. But you folks are willing, you can change that on and on. But
we're just trying to send a message that it's not a free-for-all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if it was just this $80 sitting out there for being 8 days late, we'd definitely say a letter of ed, and she would have been on the consent calendar. But when this 8 days came up, we also saw there was a fourth quarter where she never asked for mitigation. It's just sitting out there uncollected at this time.
Okay. So. And I'm guessing she'd been made aware of that previously.
She has been made aware, yes, all through a phone call with the front staff.
All right.
Okay. Is there a motion?
I move that we adopt staff recommendation.
Okay. It's been moved we adopt staff recommendation. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, staff recommendation is adopted. Nobody got the free-for-all reference. That's okay. Okay, we go to the next item, Higher Education Coordinating Commission, number 20.
Again, these are, like I say, kind of come from that whole effort of trying to clean things up. So the Higher Education Coordinating Commission has had penalties in the past. It looks like 2016 quarter three, there were $20, then 2017 quarter one, $20 behind. So again, my recommendation is no reduction on the $20 for quarter one of 2017 and giving them a letter of education for 2016 quarter three. So,
Tim? Commissioner Fiskum?
I at least will feel better if I say this. You got a reason to say it? I will. I am very familiar with this commission. The information that Mr. Thomas has provided us in his letter on page 85 strikes me as an excuse for a high-level agency, which is in fact led by a former legislator. These persons know better because of their substantial connection to things government in Salem. That said, I'm willing to support the staff recommendation if that moves forward.
Okay. Is there a motion? One more discussion.
I move that we adopt staff recommendation.
Okay, it is so moved. Go to roll call vote.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiscom?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Staff recommendation adopted. Next item, Statement of Economic Interest Penalty Correspondence, number 22.
Excuse me.
That's all right. The matter of... I missed one. I'm sorry. My apologies.
21.
I skipped one. Foster Homes of Healing, number 21.
So number 21 is a lot like the lobbyist in number 19. Again, we had a quarter two, 2018. There was $20 that was due that was not paid out there. They filed the second quarter, 2019. 8 days late, we again, our staff has kind of hooked in that former one that's just kind of hanging out there. So my recommendation is to give them a lot of education for the first quarter, for the second quarter of 2018, and charge them $50 for the second quarter of 2019 for being late.
Okay. Discussion or motion?
Moves. We accept staff recommendation.
Okay. Commissioner Starr moves we accept staff recommendation. Roll call vote.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes.
Okay. Commissioner Fiscom is not present. Okay. Next item, Statement of Economic Interest Penalty Correspondence, the matter of Ms. Lori Zeller, number 22.
Okay, so Statement of Economic Interest, we had a, in 2018, this person owed $20, didn't pay it, then was quite late in 2019, and so recommended a letter of education for the first offense in 2018 and putting 10% of the amount due for 2019 at $326.
Discussion? Motion?
Move that we adopt staff recommendation.
Commissioner Sosa, so moves. We'll go to a roll call vote.
Commissioner Fiscom?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, next, number 23, the matter of Mr. Jeff Hay.
I had no recommendation.
We're going to stick it out there, Ron.
I moved the staff right.
So we have previous violations in 16 and 17, and you waived those penalties and gave a letter of education. And then in 2018, they owed $260, and now in 19, owe $100. However, this person, as you can see, is a handwritten letter, has some problems with computers. I've actually instructed the staff in the next year, in 2020, we're just going to send him a letter or a paper return, and then when it comes in, we will put it into the system for him. So, you know, that's why I didn't have a recommendation. I mean, this person is working on this committee, this planning commission. They're just continuing a little bit late because it's the staff calling them that they're late, and then they get it in right away. And the reason they get it in is because we filed for them over the phone. So they just can't do the computer thing.
Not everybody can.
So the $360, I mean, I guess if I was going to make a recommendation, I'd go ahead and give them a letter of ed, and like I said, we as the commission will be proactive in the future in getting him a paper form that he would like to have, because as he points out, he was never late with the paper forms.
Okay.
So if I'm going to stick my neck out, that's my neck, Mr. Fiskin.
Chop, chop.
What is he on? What commission is he on?
He's on the planning commission for whatever city he's in.
Junction City.
Yeah.
That's not by Medford, isn't it?
No.
Eugene, okay. That's right. Well, you know, I'm impressed by the fact that he took the time to write this handwritten letter. He clearly isn't intending to run afoul or do evil. I'd like to take it light on this gentleman. Commissioner Keene has a different opinion.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
I'm just thinking.
Yeah? Commissioner Fiskin.
The total fine, if it were to be imposed, is $360.
That's correct.
Is that based on the matrix?
No. These are penalties that are accrued. It's a daily accrual.
Yes.
So
okay.
The first 14 days is $10 a day, then $50 a day after that.
Okay.
For being late. So, I mean, really the problem here is this person filing online, and we have done it for him, and essentially he's getting the amount of penalty on how long it takes my staff to call him, and then we file. So, like I said, I think we can get proactive as knowing that he's going to stay on the planning commission, get proactive and send him a paper form. It'll come in and we'll enter it into the system, but he'll be timely.
Do his paper forms indicate that he accepts gifts?
No. I mean, I didn't go out and look at it, but I wouldn't think so, but I guess we could go pull him out of there.
I'm just wondering how active, you know, he is. Does he own a lot of property? All that stuff that's asked on him.
I mean, we can certainly pull him. I mean, pull one up right now. I mean, we filed his forms are filed online. I don't have my.
But I was not struggling, but thinking about is there a letter of education with a quote small unquote fine that would be appropriate to help to get this person's attention? Not that he become a dedicated computer user, but that he understands that this is more than just technology. But I'm not advocating the answer there. Just thinking out loud on that point.
I just want to be clear. I'm still advocating for a letter of education,
yes.
But in that education, I will say we will bend to his will, and we will be sending him a paper form, and, you know, basically any more lateness, there won't be any more excuses going on.
Do you have a system to flag people? I mean, I'm sure there won't be very many of these folks that just don't use computers or can't use computers. But do you have a system to flag those kinds of people so that...
It's a manual thing. I mean, like I said, you know, if I had a perfect world, I probably would have flagged this fella a couple of... in 2018 after we already had 2 years. But, you know, he wrote the letter this time. Losing a little bit of my zeal for my director's report, but I'm here to report that in 2019, everyone has filed their CII. And I don't know since I've been here if we've ever been able to say in a year everybody's filed their SEI.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Including this guy?
Yeah, he filed his 2019.
Oh.
Okay. We called him within 10 days and, you know, went over and got it online. And it's just that the staff didn't get to it until it was 10 days late, and he did not go online to set up his account or do any of those things. So. But to answer your question, no, there isn't. It's going to be a manual process, so we'll put it on his account. We'll make a note to ourselves to send this person a paper form. But whatever you folks think is appropriate to remind him, it is important that he files the SEIs. I don't think he's questioning the importance of filing SEIs. He does it. He just doesn't know how to do it online, and he does it every time we contact him and do it for him. So,
Commissioner O'Day.
So I hear exactly what you're saying, Ron. I think that's a compassionate approach. I think for me to feel better about it, though, I'm going to compare this matter to the one we just voted on. Can you help me understand how this case is a little bit different from Mrs. Eller in Coburg? Because if I'm just looking at the past violations, in the pattern, it seems to be very similar. And I'm concerned about consistency.
Mm-hmm. I don't disagree with you. I'd better go back and look at it.
She did use the computer, didn't she?
I can see what you're saying here. I mean, she didn't. I can't believe the city of Coburg didn't have one planning commission meeting, but.
I think she
maybe she didn't attend.
Yeah.
Well, is there a different motion you'd like to make, Commissioner O'Day?
I think in light of the history, I mean, this gentleman has already received a waiver once, or already received a letter of education, but I also understand there's a situation here. It's not very computer savvy. So, you know, if we were to do the standard 10%, that would be $36. So we round that up to $50 with a letter of education. It at least sends a message that says, okay, you know, we're giving you one last chance here to, you know, in the future we will work with you. But you cannot just continue to flout this when we've already given you a waiver previously. Like, you knew this was a situation you needed to be proactive.
Okay, so your motion is for a letter of education and a $50 fine.
Correct.
Okay.
So the letter of education is for 18 and then $50. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Unless there's additional discussion, we'll go to roll call vote.
I apologize. Who made the motion?
Commissioner Sosa.
Thank you. Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Stark?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, that brings us into the stipulated final order section of the day, number 24, the matter of Mr. James Bernard.
Chair Burke, Commissioners, Jim Bernard is the chair of Clackamas County Board of Commissioners. On March 7th of this year, the Ethics Commission made a preliminary finding that Commissioner Bernard violated prohibited use of office and conflict of interest provisions concerning an email to the County Council and County Administrator urging them to advise his fellow commissioners to reverse a recent decision involving his spouse's request for county records in aid of her filing a private lawsuit against the county. On March 7th, when they made the preliminary findings, the Commission also voted to issue a letter of education as a sanction for these violations, and also to issue a letter of education in lieu of finding a violation related to other matters in this case. Commissioner Bernard is represented by Attorney Steve Berman in this matter, and Mr. Berman asked that I explain to the Commissioners that he's on vacation this week, and he apologizes for not being in attendance today.
Okay, Chair Burke stepped away, so in regard to this matter, does anyone have any questions for staff? All right, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I'll move approval of the staff recommendation regarding the stipulated final order relative to James Bernard.
So moved. Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sosa?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0-0.
Mr. Sosa, I didn't want to make a quick comment for the record, which is I appreciate the staff's work in bringing this matter to this kind of conclusion, given all the time we and Mr. Bernard, his counsel, spent on it. This is, I think, a very acceptable resolution to what I term to be a political issue in Clackamas County. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, item number 25, Kate Fent, staff report.
Vice Chair Shosa, Commissioners. Items number 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29 are stipulated final orders for 5 board members of the Enterprise School District. All 5 stipulations are identical, and so for purposes of the summary, I'll address them together if that's okay. These cases involve questions of whether the Enterprise School District board members... Hold on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So these involve questions of whether the Enterprise School District board members violated the executive session provisions of Oregon Public Meetings Law by discussing complaints against and or employment performance of the district's athletic director and the high school principal without having first satisfied the prerequisites of providing sufficient advance notice of the purpose of the meeting and an opportunity to request an open hearing. And 2, taking final action in executive session by participating in a roll call vote on a letter to the student's family. In this case, the school district board does not record its executive sessions. So during the investigation, we interviewed the people who were present, including board members and the high school principal. Based on the information provided, it appears that during the December 3rd executive session, the board members discussed the content of a letter to the student's family, which content referenced complaints made against the athletic director and the high school principal. But in the executive session, the board did not actually discuss those complaints or the two employees. Instead, the board discussed whether to send the letter as currently drafted or postpone it for further revisions. Ultimately, the board took final action in exec session by voting to send the letter as currently drafted. In so doing, the board violated ORS 192.660 subsection 6. The stipulated final orders that are in your meeting books reflect one violation of the statute and provide that each board member will receive a letter of education.
Okay. Comment? Questions? Okay. Entertain a motion.
Question. Are we able to do a motion for all of those matters at once from the individual?
We have to do them individually.
Would move that we adopt the stipulated final order for item number 25, Kate Cunn.
Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Dean?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Order is adopted. Next item, number 26, case of Heather Melville. Yes, Commissioner Sosa.
Mr. Chair, move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item 26.
So moved. Roll call vote.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Order is adopted. Number 27.
Mr. Chair, move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item number 27.
So moved. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passed unanimously.
So moved. Order adopted. Number 28.
Mr. Chair, move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item number 28.
So moved. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Order adopted. Number 29.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item number 29.
So moved. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Keene?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
It's a beautiful part of the state, Willamette County. Order adopted. Number 30, the matter of Thomas Ongman.
Chair Burke, Commissioners, items 30, 31, and 32 are stipulated final orders for three of the five board members of the Basin Ambulance Service District. The stipulations are basically the same, and your permission, I'll address them together. These cases involved an executive session held on April 18th. Information indicates the board chair failed to announce the specific statutory authority, and then during the executive session, the board discussed a complaint against and dismissal of three district volunteers without having provided them with the sufficient notice and opportunity to request an open hearing. Finally, the board did take final action by voting to terminate the volunteers while in executive session. However, the board cured this violation by immediately returning to open session and repeating the vote. And during the preliminary review, we did not include that as a violation. As indicated in our prior meeting, when the commission moved this matter to investigation, the board members were all very cooperative and ready to acknowledge their mistakes. The three stipulated final orders in your meeting books provide for a letter of education, and we anticipate finalizing the stipulations with the other two board members and hope to have those for you at the October meeting.
Okay. Very good. Discussion or motion?
I move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item 30.
Okay. So moved. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keen?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0.
Okay. Number 31.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item 31.
Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keen?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0.
Okay. Order is adopted. Number 32.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the stipulated final order in regard to item 32.
So moved. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keen?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes 5-0.
Order is adopted. Matter of Tom McCoy, number 33.
Chair Burke, commissioners, items number 33, 34, and 35 are stipulated final orders for the three board members of the Tri-County Mental Health Board for the Mid-Columbia Center for Living. Again, the stipulations are basically the same, and for summary, I'll address them together. On May 14, 2019, the board went into executive session without having identified or announced the statutory authority. While in executive session, the board then discussed two matters, the executive director's resignation and the possibility of a merger with a private entity that would not have been authorized under any of the provisions in 192.660. During the preliminary review and even after this matter moved to investigation, the board members all acknowledged their mistake. They explained they were relying on information and advice of the executive director. However, it is the individual board member's responsibility to ensure that executive session is properly announced and the topics are authorized. The stipulated final orders that are in your meeting books provide for letters of education for the three board members, who are, by the way, all county commissioners, as it is their first violation.
Okay, discussion or motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt stipulated final order in regard to item number 33.
Commissioner Sosa so moves. Roll call vote.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keen?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, number 34.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt item, we move to adopt stipulated final order in regard to item 34.
Okay, so moves. Roll call vote.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keen?
Aye.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay. Order is adopted. Let's see.
35.
Yep, 35 is next.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt stipulated final order in regard to item 35.
Yep, roll call vote, please.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiskum?
Aye.
Commissioner Keen?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Orders are adopted. I think that's our last action item for the day. We have some other items coming up. It might be a good time to get lunch.
There's one more.
One more?
Yeah, the advisory opinion is voted on by the commission.
Okay, yes. I missed that. My apologies.
No problem.
Okay, staff report, please.
Chair Burke, commissioners, this opinion revisits the issue of how the ethics law applies to public officials who are first responders and wish to avail themselves of the offer to subscribe to AT&T's FirstNet network service for their own private phone or device. Initially, the commission staff wrote informal advice on this issue, which stated that public officials who are first responders would be able to have the FirstNet service on their personal phones unless AT&T had an administrative interest in matters subject to their decisions as public officials. Recently, more information was provided indicating that FirstNet service was offered to a substantial number of non-public first responders, such as medical personnel in hospitals, trauma centers, emergency rooms, and other private employees in the medical field, such as ambulance people and EMTs. This opinion recognizes that the AT&T FirstNet network access is designed for all first responders, regardless of whether they are public officials. Also, there is only one vendor for this service, and fixed prices are available to all first responders on the same terms and conditions, regardless of whether they work for private or public entities. So I think you have to decide whether to adopt this as commission advisory opinion.
Okay. Is there a staff recommendation?
Our recommendation is to adopt it. Yes. I mean, it is written with With the advice of the mayor, so we believe this is the correct interpretation of the statutes.
Okay, very good. Is there a motion to do so?
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the advisory opinion, item number 37.
Okay, Commissioner Sosa so moves. Roll call vote.
Commissioner O'Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Sosa?
Aye.
Commissioner Starr?
Aye.
Commissioner Fiscom?
Aye.
Commissioner Key?
Aye.
Chair Burke?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, it's so adopted. Now let's break for lunch. Let's get our food and finish the rest of the agenda.
Yeah, we're going to have you watch a movie.
Oh.
So the movies are a half hour long.
Not a good movie.
So we're only going to do one today and one the next time.
Yeah,
so
Rick and Morty.
Would you prefer Preventing Discrimination, Harassment, and Sexual Harassment, or Information Security Today? Your choice.
Those are some riveting choices, Ron.
Obviously, sexual.
Okay, let's go with Commissioner Key, since she said she's going to be off the
show. Wait a minute. How recent is the film? It's not like from the 50s, right?
These every state employee, people that work for the state, have to take these two trainings. And so,
well, why do we have to take them?
Because you are a public official for the state of Oregon.
And just to be clear, this is an anti-sexual harassment training.
I'm assuming the whole theme is against it.
Yeah.
Well, we'll wait to see.
It's better to get your food, and we'll play it while we eat. So.
Okay. So, hey, Virginia?
Yes?
So I have it on my calendar that the next meeting is the 3rd. The website has the 4th, and this has the 4th.
It's the 4th Friday?
4th is Friday.
That's the one that we changed to Thursday, and we just put the calendar.
Our web has it the 4th.
Okay.
And
I think we updated our calendar.
And our forms here have the 4th, but on my calendar at the in my office, it's on the 3rd.
You're fine, Senator. Okay.
So, we need to figure out which day it is.
Thank you, man.
Yep,
absolutely. I mean, it's on the calendar on Outlook is the 3rd.
Right. Senator, I
think
that
we did move one.
I saw that this morning, and I thought that was the one we moved, but I didn't recognize that we had
something to move. The chair just pointed out, because I told him it was Thursday, he pointed out in this book it says Friday, and so I looked up our website, and it says the 4th on the website.
So it is the 4th.
What's that?
It is the 4th.
I have it down to the 3rd still.
I've checked the meeting room.
Somebody brought me my food, thank you.
What's up, Sandy?
I think so.
A little personal.
It's all good. This training contains some audio. If you have speakers or headphones, please use them to listen to the narrative. Oregon State Government.
So there is actually, I'll wait until everybody gets here.
Are you having to sit through this for the
second time? I think every year we have to go through it, but there's a test. And I just want everybody to pay attention to waiting up.
Yeah.
And collectively, that'll be interesting.
So do we take the test as a group?
Yeah.
Oh, great.
You will.
So no drunk texting is probably one of them.
You can help me pass it, son.
Yikes.
They're going to teach us not to drunk text.
Thank you, Jeff. That one. I'll definitely do that. Yeah.
And they say, that also is.
So, you know me too well. Who has the responsibility for choosing Little Lois?
Well, I voted for it.
I think it's you who
voted.
Have that responsibility.
No, it was a vote.
And I lost.
Oh, you're the only one.
Oh, what did you want?
Hamburger? Right, yes.
Well, was that how? Actually, I didn't serve because I wasn't here.
You were here. So, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no.
There was a vote that Kathy took.
It's a great place to go to.
And I lost.
It's just down the street. When you're there, he'll, if you call ahead, he'll seat you, so it doesn't roll the table. That's really nice.
Yeah. But we should go there the next time if we ever have another retreat.
And they do have a meeting room that they can cordon off, you know, for if you did a workshop. We try not to use that word retreat.
It's an advance.
That forget. Always feels kind of weird. Some people are like, why are you giving a retreat? But, yeah, definitely you could. So if you eat there, it's phenomenal. Uh-huh. I mean, it's great. He does a lot of things by scratch and whatnot.
Yeah, but it's like all hot items.
And yeah, a traveling where it's been
you like your own cold hamburger.
Cold hamburger, yeah, that's my favorite.
Cold fries.
I just lose again.
It's a Ruby. It's right down the street. It's in that industrial area. And Ferguson's Bath is there. There's a window. So if you just, if you leave our parking lot and go to your right,
oh, it's down by the stadium.
Is it that Gilderman?
No. No. You're going to the left out our driveway. If you go the right out of our driveway, then you'll head back towards Salem Capitol. But it'll still be on the right side. So he has a little, one of those things that with the air, it blows up and wiggles.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. But it's not in a traditional area where there would be vendors of food. He just happens to make his son. And all our son leased that on a piece of the warehouse and converted it to a restaurant.
You
see book fight when I was my daughter was in
you.
School. We got books from them. They've since expanded.
Oh, it's over in the book fight area?
Where they used to be. They're not there anymore.
Okay.
But Ferguson's Bath is there. There's a huge 8-foot chain that extends all around it. So again, you wouldn't think it'd be very welcoming to come in because it's all warehouses. Yeah. But in fact, it's not. So pretty sad.
Also, Tammy, I drove through Lebanon the other day.
You did. It has. Yes, and
just
it's now
just where I was going.
I'll tell you. You talk about vision. The city councilors for the past 15 years have been extremely thoughtful in what they thought Lebanon could be. They have brought some big money in, big companies in.
Good for them.
And I'll tell you, this is how much it's changed. In the 2 years I've lived there, I bought one house. It was $159,000. It's just now been appraised at $260,000.
Wow.
In 2 years, the market has just absolutely skyrocketed. So it's kind of a bedroom community to Corvallis. So most everybody that lives in my area, they commute into either Salem, Portland, or Corvallis. Because Corvallis is $400,000, where Lebanon is just now getting to the 3 months.
Just what I was doing there.
That's great. Well, we can buy a house now.
The Allen Creek.
Oh, you did, and I did take my grandson out there. I haven't made that call yet.
You should have.
Yeah.
So that's where I was.
Oh, yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's fun. Oh, it's great place. Yeah.
I take my writing lessons out that direction. Windfall Farms is just past.
Writing what? Horses?
Yeah, jumping.
Oh, awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. You know, I don't know how young couples who aren't moneyed get into the real estate market anymore. It's really tough.
They don't.
You don't, well,
I think it's the answer.
I just found a house that was really, really run down, and a grandson that inherited and said, I want some cash, and auctions, I think, are the way to go still. I'm not in the market, by the way. No, I was waiting for nothing. I guess that everyone's here. Okay. So, now that everyone is here, I just want to advise you that there is a test, and you'll collectively take it. So if for any reason the sections where it gives definitions, you want me to read those to you, you can't see them, you'll need to move closer. So with that being said, I'll go ahead and start the...
one of you will get it right.
So you'll be,
all get to guess together, and just one
you
of
will,
us get it?
You will all either collectively vote for the answer, or one of you will vote somebody to take the test. So I'll leave that up to you guys.
Well, the state government is committed to creating and maintaining a respectful workplace free of any type of discrimination or harassment. This training is for all state employees, volunteers, and board and commission members. This training is intended to provide an overview of preventive discrimination, harassment, and sexual harassment in the workplace. It does not and cannot override federal or state law, rules, policies, or procedures. While the intent is to periodically update the material to comply with applicable laws, it is incumbent upon you to use the current and effective laws, rules, policies, and procedures. Where in conflict, the applicable law, rule, policy, or procedure takes precedence over information contained in this training. For the purpose of this training, we will use the term employee to include full-time, part-time, limited duration, and temporary employees, board and commission members, and volunteers. Everyone working on behalf of Oregon State Government should be committed to creating and maintaining a respectful workplace and treating all individuals with fairness, dignity, and respect. This course will provide an overview of inappropriate workplace behavior, discrimination, workplace harassment, and sexual harassment, key definitions, the laws and statewide policies, the responsibilities of employees and managers, how to report, and the criteria for investigations, and bystander intervention techniques.
All right, you ready? I'll go in no particular order. And again, I'll leave it up to you guys if you want to read them yourselves or I can read them out loud.
I have a question about this. If someone is mentally disabled for some reason and you have a job available or a promotion that's available, but it requires mental agility and you don't hire that person because of their mental disability, are you guilty of discrimination?
Well, I think we would need to consider ADA compliance, because mental disability, from my understanding, would be covered by the ADA. So if you can make accommodations to the nature of the job to accommodate their disability.
So if they just aren't able to do the job as well as another applicant would be.
They have to be able to perform the duties of
Okay. But you wouldn't be inherently discriminating against them if they were less qualified because of the disability, if you were not able to accommodate the disability.
Correct. But if it, for example, was that they were blind and therefore unable to read and you were unwilling to accommodate that disability, that's,
Right. Okay. But if you were hiring a driver, obviously you couldn't hire somebody who was blind.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Hopefully.
Did everybody read this definition?
I'm just reading out loud.
Okay, so
while they're eating.
Workplace harassment is unwelcome, unwanted, or offensive conduct based on or because of an employee's protected class status. Harassment may occur between a manager, supervisor, and a subordinate, between employees, and among non-employees who have business contact with employees. A complaint does not have to be the person harassed, but could be a person affected by the offensive conduct. Sexual harassment. Sexual harassment is unwelcome, unwanted, or offensive sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, and other verbal or physical conduct of a sexual nature when submission to such conduct is made either explicitly or implicitly, a term or condition of the individual's employment, or is used as a basis for any employment decision, granting leave requests, promotion, favorable performance appraisals, etc. Or such conduct is unwelcome, unwanted, or offensive and has the purpose or effect of unreasonably interfering with an individual's work performance or creating an intimidating, hostile, or offensive working environment. Inappropriate workplace behavior. Inappropriate workplace behavior is unwelcome or unwanted conduct behavior that causes a negative impact or disruption to the workplace or the business of the state or results in the erosion of employee morale and is not associated with an employee's protected class status. Examples of inappropriate workplace behavior may include comments, actions, or behaviors of an individual or group that embarrass, humiliate, intimidate, disparage, demean, or show disrespect for another person. Professional workplace behavior. Professional workplace behavior is supporting the values and mission of Oregon state government and the agency. Building positive relationships with others, communicating in a respectful manner, holding oneself accountable, and pursuing change within the system.
Any of these images could be representative of respect. We all have a different definition of what constitutes respect and how we would like to be treated. The important thing to remember is perception is reality. The way someone perceives what you have said or done is what counts, not your intention. Another term for action that is contrary to respect is inappropriate workplace behavior. Inappropriate behavior can make the workplace a very difficult environment. It can impact morale and cause a loss of production.
So the objective here is to click on each index card to learn about ways to handle situations when a coworker says something that offends you. A is to avoid speaking in second person. Beginning every sentence with you is very accusatory, even if you are only stating what appear to be facts to you. A better way to start is by saying something like, I was uncomfortable with a remark you made earlier. This way you establish it is your discomfort that you want to address. B, be brief but explicit. Simply tell a person that they said made you upset, what the person said made you upset. If you want to tell them why, make it short and to the point, but without being curt. Something like, it's an issue that hits close to home for me. Should be reason enough for the person to respect it. Or C, don't expect an apology. If the person is sorry, they will tell you. Don't wait around for an apology if it's not coming. The purpose of telling them you were offended was merely to inform them.
There are other ways language can be offensive in the workplace. Could you imagine if this music were turned up louder? That could be very distracting. One of the things we need to keep in mind in the workplace is the volume of our music, the volume of our voice, and the words we choose can carry further than we may have intended. Customers in our lobby, people we speak with over the phone, and other coworkers may be disrupted or offended. Be aware of your audience at all times. What we say, the tone of our voice, and how we say it can greatly impact our relationships with coworkers, stakeholders, or customers. People may walk away and wish to speak with a supervisor, write the director's office, or worse yet, not return. In HR, we frequently hear, well, I didn't mean it that way. Our actions may be perceived differently than our intent. Here are some other examples of inappropriate workplace behavior.
The objective here is to click on each index card to learn a determinative perspective on how I choose to spend my personal time. A, it is nobody's business but mine. It is your business, but bringing certain things into the workplace has the potential to create an uncomfortable or disrespectful environment. B, depends on who's around. Maybe, but you may not know which words, actions, or behaviors may be offensive to someone until it's too late. Or C, is limited to what's acceptable at work. What you do on your own time, outside of work, does not have to conform to what is acceptable in the workplace unless there is a nexus to your employment.
Social media can be seen by others. We may have even friended our coworkers. We often can't control what will be reposted or viewed by friends of friends. In the workplace, it is highly discouraged to check personal email or view social media sites because we have no control over the content that others post or share. That seemingly private get-together last weekend is suddenly spreading like wildfire because of instant upload. The comment you made has been retweeted or compromising pictures posted. If you are reviewing personal email using your personal device or looking at social media, a passing third party may view unintended content on your screen. Remember, know your audience.
The objective of this is to click on each index card and learn ways to handle situations when a coworker begins gossiping about another coworker. A. Don't participate. Walk away from the story. Don't give visual clues that you're interested in listening. If someone passes a juicy story on to you, don't pass it any further. B. Say something positive. Turn the conversation around by saying something positive about the person being attacked. It isn't nearly as much fun to spread negative news if it's spoiled by you saying something positive about the person. Or C. Be direct. If you let the gossiper know this behavior is making you uncomfortable, they are more likely to stop.
One of the hardest things to do when put in a position where a friend or coworker is gossiping is to ask them to stop. Here are some tips for respectfully asking someone to stop gossiping to you. Describe the behavior.
When you talk about other people behind their back.
Express your feelings using I statements. Specify what new behavior you would like. What are some of the consequences if you don't get the behavior you want? Many times we offend someone without even knowing it. Often it is best if handled at the lowest level and the person lets you know you offended them. For someone to feel comfortable doing this, it is important you do not get defensive when they come to you with a concern. Here are some tips for receiving this constructive feedback. Listen first and be aware of your body language. Apologize. Say what you will do. Thank the person for letting you know. Now that we all understand inappropriate workplace behavior, the question becomes, what is harassment and discrimination? Inappropriate workplace behavior is the largest box because it is the category the majority of complaints fall under. We do, however, still receive complaints that fall under workplace harassment and discrimination. Let's take a look at workplace harassment. The biggest difference between inappropriate workplace behavior and harassment is that under our policy, workplace harassment must be based on or because of a protected class. So what is a protected class? Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 established the initial protected classes. Title VII prohibited anyone from harassing or discriminating against another person based on their protected class. Since 1964, many new classes have been added. In addition to those classes protected by federal law, the state of Oregon has its own list of protected classes. These too change occasionally. When an employment decision is made based on a protected class, it becomes discrimination. Let's take a look at some employment decisions. Thank you.
quiet in here.
Click your mouse on the blue text to see some other examples of employment-related decisions.
Don't do that.
Whoever accused David of being a cute girl. I'll get back.
Sexual harassment in the workplace is not a recent issue, but for centuries there was no legal recourse for victims. In the United States, the groundwork for establishing federal sexual harassment laws and eventually making sexual harassment illegal in the workplace was established by the Civil Rights Act of 1964, making it illegal to discriminate on the basis of race, color, religion, sex, or national origin. Although sexual harassment is a form of sex discrimination, it took many years for U.S. courts and legislation to define it and create laws that would protect workers. In fact, the first sexual harassment cases were not brought until the mid-1970s, and the United States Supreme Court did not hear a sexual harassment case until a decade later. Here is a timeline of some of the most significant events and laws that helped define what is today classified as sexual harassment in the workplace. Click on each decade to learn more.
Let me know when I can move forward. Keep going. Okay.
Sexual harassment still remains a widespread problem affecting people in every kind of workplace setting and at every level of employment. Here are some realities about workplace sexual harassment in the U.S. 1 in 4 women say they've been sexually harassed. 4 in 10 women say they've experienced unwanted sexual conduct. 6 in 10 women say they've experienced sexist, crude, or offensive language, visuals, or behaviors. In 2018, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission received 7,609 charges of sexual harassment, resulting in $56.6 million in direct settlement charges. Of the 7,609 charges filed, 15.9% were filed by males. few people who experience sexual harassment formally make a complaint to their employers or file a charge with Fair Employment agencies. People are reluctant to make allegations of sexual harassment for a number of reasons. A single incident can have a far-reaching impact on your agency while undermining employee morale and creating an unhealthy work environment. Stopping sexual harassment is everyone's responsibility, and together we can help prevent it. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 makes it unlawful for an employer to refuse to hire, discharge, or otherwise discriminate against a person on the basis of sex with respect to terms and conditions of employment. Sexual harassment in the workplace may also be unlawful sex-based discrimination. Let's take a closer look at the federal definition when sexual harassment can occur and the statewide HR policies that apply. Click on each item to learn more. The next five slides will state a fact or myth about sexual harassment. You will drag and drop the true or the false post-it note to the drop area on the clipboard. Then an answer slide will be displayed, where you will click on the X button to continue to the next slide. Click next to view the five fact or myth statements.
False.
I knew Allison was going to this
book. You like false, you are correct.
How do you know that, Allison?
Experience of the harassment and the harasser can either
that's
be a woman
15%
or another gender identity.
That's right. 15.9%.
Only people working in low-wage jobs have a higher incidence of harassment.
That is a badly worded question.
Yeah, I was going to say that too.
Anything starts with only is false.
I don't understand their question.
False.
You selected false, you're correct. No occupation is immune from the sexual harassment.
People
working in the industry with a high proportion of low-wage jobs such as food, service, and agriculture report a higher rate of sexual harassment. Yet the same is true in professions that used to be predominantly male, such as construction, medicine, and science. Non-sexual conduct directed at a person because of the person's gender identity does constitute sexual harassment.
True.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Poorly worded, but I think that's
true.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true.
You're kidding.
Much poorly worded. They want us to answer true, but the question is so badly worded.
Non-sexual
it's true.
Conduct yeah. directed at
how
a person.
How can non-sexual conduct constitute sexual harassment?
It's like, how about that Yankee game?
False. What are we going with, true or false?
True.
I know the answer. If you selected true, you're correct. True. Non-sexual conduct because of a person's gender identity can be sexual harassment. This includes offensive or derogatory comments about a person in general or hostile or derogatory remarks because a person is not conforming to stereotype about how they should behave.
Could you get in touch with them and tell them to reword the question so they make sense?
That frightens me, because if you're talking to somebody who's transgender and you innocently, you know, think you're bonding and you say, how about that Yankee game last night, you could get in trouble.
I don't think that's
not what
I don't know that the game would be the issue. I wouldn't. I think
because, you know, you're manly sports and stereotype and...
No.
Okay.
I think it's more, think of it in terms of stereotypes. So stereotypical comments made about somebody's gender
can result in sexual
harassment,
even though that's not sexual in nature.
Right, if you're talking about the gender of the person you're talking to, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a better question.
Sexual harassment based on gender identity and sexual orientation can violate Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act.
Yes.
True.
If you selected true, you're correct. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and some courts consider harassment and other discrimination based on gender identity and sexual orientation to be forms of gender-based harassment that violate Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act. Only supervisors or those in authority positions can be a harasser.
There's that only thing.
It's not all about power, huh? If you selected false, you're correct. A harasser can be a supervisor in another area, a coworker, or someone who is not an employee of the agency, such as a client, customer, or contractor.
Can a subordinate?
Under Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, there are two recognized types of sexual harassment, quid pro quo and hostile environment. Click next to watch a short video describing the two types of sexual harassment and how different forms of sexual harassment can manifest.
Sexual harassment is any unwelcome verbal, visual, or physical conduct of a sexual nature that is severe or pervasive and affects working conditions or creates a hostile work environment. There are generally three forms of sexual harassment behavior: verbal, visual, and physical. Verbal harassment includes comments about clothing, a person's body, sexual or gender-based jokes or remarks, requesting sexual favors, or repeatedly asking a person out. It also includes sexual innuendos, threats, spreading rumors about a person's personal or sexual life, or using foul and obscene language. Visual harassment can include posters, drawings, pictures, screensavers, cartoons, emails, or texts of a sexual nature. Physical harassment often includes sexual assault, impeding or blocking movement, inappropriate touching such as kissing, hugging, patting, stroking, or rubbing, sexual gesturing, or even leering or staring. Each of these forms of harassment can be broken down into two categories: quid pro quo and hostile work environment. Quid pro quo means this for that. This happens when an employer or supervisor uses job rewards or punishments to coerce an employee into a sexual relationship or sexual act. This includes offering the employee raises or promotions, or threatening demotions, firing, or other penalties for not complying with the request. A hostile work environment occurs when employee behavior interferes with the work performance of another, or creates an intimidating or offensive workplace. This usually happens when someone makes repeated sexual comments to make another employee feels so uncomfortable that their work performance suffers, or they decline professional opportunities because it would put them in contact with the harasser. In either type of harassment, employees only have to prove that the behavior was offensive to someone, even if it was not the intended recipient. For example, Mike tells a dirty joke to Linda. Linda loves the joke and laughs. However, Michelle happens to be walking by when the joke is told. Michelle is offended by the joke. That joke could contribute to a hostile environment claim because Michelle, who happened to be in the area, finds the dirty joke offensive. There are two conditions to determine if a company is liable. The first is whether the employer knew or should have known about the harassment. The second is whether the employer failed to take appropriate corrective action. Having policies in place and an active training program can shield employers from expensive lawsuits.
The courts use these elements to analyze whether a hostile environment claim is valid in a sexual harassment case, whether the conduct was verbal, physical, or both, frequency of the conduct, whether the conduct was hostile or blatantly offensive, whether the alleged harasser was a coworker or manager, whether others joined in perpetrating the harassment, whether the harassment was directed at more than one individual, or was the victim singled out. Now let's take a look at the roles and responsibilities of employees and managers, how to report inappropriate workplace behavior, discrimination, workplace harassment, or sexual harassment, how a complaint is investigated, retaliation, and acknowledgement of the statewide policies. As an employee, you are probably asking yourself, what role do I play in helping to prevent discrimination or harassment? There are many things you can do to help prevent it. Click on each number to learn more.
Tip number one, taking this training and becoming familiar with the laws and policies of inappropriate workplace behavior, discrimination, workplace harassment, and sexual harassment are great first steps to increase your awareness. Number two, be aware of what others may perceive as potential behaviors or subtle forms of discrimination or harassment at work. Number three, be sensitive to others and watch for and discourage harassing behaviors at work. Here now. Number four, pay attention to the verbal and nonverbal responses of others in order to avoid unintentional offense. Five, do not assume people enjoy or want to hear jokes or sexually oriented comments about their appearance, be touched, stared at, flirted with, or asked for dates or sexual favors. Number six, examine your behaviors, gestures, and comments. Ask yourself, when I interact and communicate at work, do I sound offensive or sexually suggestive? Do my verbal or nonverbal behaviors have the potential to negatively impact others? Number seven, do not take discrimination or harassment lightly. If you think you're being discriminated against or witness inappropriate workplace behavior by an individual or a group, do not accept it as a joke. Do not encourage the person by smiling, laughing, or flirting. Let the person know that you do not enjoy or welcome this type of attention and they should stop. Number eight, document and report all incidents of discrimination or harassment, even if you're not sure it's discrimination or harassment. While it may not rise to the level of discrimination or harassment, it may be inappropriate workplace behavior. Be as detailed as possible. Include the date, time, location, people involved, and other relevant information. Tip 9. If you do say something inappropriate, immediately apologize and refrain from making further comments of the same nature.
First and most importantly, you do not want a workplace culture that allows any form of discrimination or harassment to occur, and managers are at the front line to help prevent it. Managers are held to a higher standard and are expected to take a proactive stance to ensure the integrity of the work environment. It is everyone's responsibility to create a positive work environment. Employees should behave professionally at all times. At the same time, managers should set a positive example. Click on each item to learn more about the guidelines managers should follow.
Do not make assumptions. Do not assume a report of discrimination or harassment is it valid or invalid since you don't have all the information. Avoid unwelcome physical contact with others. Never use jokes or tolerate words, phrases, or gestures with sexual, religious, racial, gender, or disability undertones, and do not tolerate inappropriate jokes or comments from others. Practice courtesy and respect for everyone in your workplace. Take all complaints seriously. If an employee comes to you with a complaint of discrimination or harassment, take immediate action by following the reporting and investigation guidelines and your agency's internal policies and processes. Only those people with a legitimate business need to know should be involved. Contact your HR section immediately. Courts have found that organizations as well as managers can be held liable for damages related to discrimination or harassment. Liability is based on an organization's responsibility to maintain a certain level of order and discipline or on the manager acting as an agent of the organization.
Anyone who is subjected to or aware of what they believe to be any type of discrimination or harassment should report the behavior to their immediate manager, another manager, or the agency board or commission's HR section, the executive director or chair, or the DAS Chief Human Resources Office. All discrimination and harassment complaints must be investigated. Even if the person reporting the allegations is not requesting or wanting an investigation, a report of discrimination or harassment is considered a complaint. A manager receiving a complaint should promptly notify their agency HR section. HR is usually involved and will investigate the allegations to establish the facts. The complaint can be reported orally or in writing and should include all of these items. Click each item to learn more.
the name of the complainant and the name of the person subjected to the discrimination or harassment if they are not the same person, the names of all parties involved, including witnesses, a specific and detailed description of the alleged conduct or action the employee believes is discriminatory or harassing, the date and time period in which the alleged conduct occurred, a description of the desired remedy.
When an employee makes a complaint, it is the responsibility of the agency to coordinate and conduct a prompt and thorough investigation to determine whether discrimination or harassment occurred. The statewide discrimination and harassment-free workplace policy outlines criteria for the investigation, but your agency may have an internal policy or procedure for conducting an investigation. Make sure to check with your HR section as well. Agencies may need to consult with the Department of Justice or the DAS Chief Human Resources Office in cases where there may be actual or potential conflicts of interest or additional risks. The agency should take detailed statements from the complainant, the alleged harasser, and witnesses, and determine if the allegations are supported by the facts. All steps of the investigation should be thoroughly documented. The statewide discrimination and harassment-free workplace policy outlines the following criteria for investigation. Click on each one to learn more.
Do you guys want me to keep reading these, or do you want?
We got it.
I'm good.
Thank you.
You're
just looking.
Let me know when to go.
Go, please.
It's very difficult for me.
We're just repeating things.
Probably should say this: these trainings are really designed for a person to be sitting at their own computer, mm-hmm. not so much for the big screen.
Retaliation against a complainant or a witness is completely unacceptable. If an allegation of retaliation occurs, another investigation will proceed, and if retaliation is found, appropriate action will be taken, up to and including dismissal. State temporary employees and volunteers who retaliate against others may be subject to termination of their working or volunteer relationship with the agency. Employees who believe they have been retaliated against should report this behavior to their manager, another manager, or HR. It's not the victim's responsibility to avoid being harassed. We can't pretend harassers will simply stop because we have a policy. It's up to all of us to create a culture of safety where discrimination and harassment will not be tolerated. How do we go about creating a culture of safety? The answer is quite simple. We all must be empowered bystanders. Empowered bystanders are people willing to get involved when they witness harassing behavior or inappropriate conduct. And it doesn't necessarily mean you will have to get directly involved, so you don't necessarily need to confront the harasser. In fact, there are 5 different approaches you can use to handle the situation: direct, delay, distract, delegate, and document. Click on each person to see the different bystander approaches.
What do you guys want to do?
Direct.
Direct approach.
Stop leering at the intern.
Stop leering at the intern. Okay.
Scenario two. What would you do?
Delay. Pull him aside and say, dude.
Yeah. Are we going with delay?
No.
We're going
direct. Direct. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Questions, you gotta get
80%.
Oh, ready?
Yeah.
I am.
Well, I think one is always a good idea.
That'll be the correct answer now.
Every time.
Not your lawyer.
Too many lawyers in the room.
I'll number the bullet points 1, 2, 3, and 4.
1.
I think us lawyers have to declare a conflict.
Correct.
Got one right.
Which of the following is protected class?
Four.
Yeah.
I don't know what two means.
I don't know what one means.
Yeah, what's one?
You can't discriminate against somebody just because they've got a member of the family working in the same agency.
Oh.
So nepotism is somewhat protected under Oregon law.
Okay.
So I think that's what they're trying to say.
Are we going to go with all?
All?
Yeah.
All right.
No, not too long.
Well, if more than one of them.
Diane's throwing her head in. She feels like
it doesn't give you an A and C option or anything like that, so okay. It's probably all.
So we're getting there with our 80%.
Yeah. You know, I'm physically awkward. I don't know if I'm protected or something. So.
E.
Yeah, E.
Okay.
I didn't know that. Excuse me. I didn't see it.
Oh. You guys are cooking on this. That's like number three.
I'm sure it is.
Oh,
okay.
Chinese.
Yes.
Yeah.
I see heads shaking. Yes, I'm gonna go with
yeah. That one's good.
Play with that. Okay. True or false?
True.
True.
Like it 100%.
With all the collective wisdom.
One, two, three, or
where's
four?
The all above?
Yeah.
Well, there's a first step that talked about.
A.
Yeah, it's got to be A, because arguably all of them don't do that as an option, so yeah, A.
So we're going to go there?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All of them.
Okay, we're wrong.
Okay.
Ah,
so who were they saying was included?
The customers.
Customers.
That's not true.
I know.
If you commit sexual harassment against a customer as an employee, you're
exactly right.
But the customer, right. The customer.
The customer. No, I think that the customers can't commit it against the. You can't have a sexual harassment claim against a customer.
Yeah, a customer could come in and say nice dress and nothing can happen to the customer, right?
Yeah, I think that's what they were getting at.
Oh, I see.
It's not the law.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah. It's just the maintaining a professional workplace policy applied to.
Oh,
this is
everybody. But yeah. Got it.
This is everybody?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not customers.
For you.
Employees.
Why not?
Even lobbyists. And
the law does, but not the
policy. We get on that?
That's
over 80%.
Okay. Yeah?
Yeah.
We are. Wouldn't it be something if the Ethics Commission failed the test?
That's all that apply. Which one?
Yeah, all of them.
Well,
yeah.
Does it apply to the first one?
Yeah, so I'm not sure.
I think it's all the above.
Which one, Commissioner Keene, do you want to?
I don't think A, but I don't know.
I don't think A either.
We're on the track to get 80% A.
Yeah.
Let's so roll the dice.
Harassers, your immediate supervisor, you have to go to another.
Go.
Okay. Yeah. Yay. Trying to encourage you. Oh, sorry.
You know the answer.
I don't know the answer.
Click on the correct term for the definition. Which definition is this?
Middle one.
Consensus here?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. We'll keep going as fast as we can.
Discrimination.
Yes.
Yeah.
Discrimination.
What's left? What's left?
See, that one's tough.
Can a subordinate be guilty of sexually harassing the superior?
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's workplace harassment.
Yeah, no, it's got to be workplace, okay. Not sexual, okay. Just on the words.
Okay.
Yeah, that's sexual harassment. Oh, boy.
94.1.
Your commission just passed, Mr. Burson.
It actually took all of us to do it, but we did it. Pretty proud of it. No hat racks in here, I tell you. Lots of brain power going on.
Thank you, Tammy.
Nice drawing. All right.
Yep, we do have business.
Share just a few more things.
We are doing a pretty good job of rocking today, actually. So, okay, so we are in staff advice for correspondence and received responses, number 38.
Yeah, they're all just they're just informational-only items.
Okay, nothing in particular you want to report on?
Just lots of advice in between the last two meetings.
Okay.
People ask us questions.
With the Christian's indulgence, I'd like to have just a brief conversation around number 38. This is the one related to reimbursement of a public official's legal expenses by a public agency. First, let me say at the outset, I have no issue with the staff opinion itself. I think, given the facts, it was the right conclusion. But I do think, and we've had quite a bit of conversations around when is it an appropriate use of an agency's in-house counsel for matters that may be both part personal and part public, such as ethics violations, or in this case, it was about the public records request and whether the documents held by that public official were subject to disclosure, and whether they could get outside legal counsel to review that for them and then have the agency reimburse that person for that expense. Again, I think it's a fine outcome with the staff advice. I think it's the right outcome with the staff advice, but just as a general matter, this use of lawyers for matters that could be perceived to have a personal element to it, I think it's something this commission should look at in the future. Mm-hmm.
And,
yes, Commissioner King.
Thank you, Commissioner O'Day. I also want to talk about, at some point, I agree with what Commissioner O'Day said. However, I am interested in us continuing to examine whether the fact that by law, public employees are often indemnified by their agency if they have an argument that they were acting within the scope of their duties. And I think in some cases that come before us with ethics violations, they may have been incorrect. If they were acting within the scope of their official duties, then it seems to me that having the agency's general counsel or in-house attorneys represent them is not a gift. It's not in their official compensation package because it's actually by law that they get that representation. It's hard to talk about it in an abstract or hypothetical, so it will be good to have it before us, but it has come up before. In this case, if the attorney, the in-house counsel, or the city attorney had represented this board member in the public records response, I would view that as not a gift, but as part of the agency's response to a public records request. It's not an issue here. She wanted to hire her own lawyer, so I agree that it would have been a gift to reimburse that. But I hope that our answer would have been it was not a gift if the question had been can she use the city attorney's office to help represent the response about her public records since they were in the course of her official duties. Whether or not she's been appropriately withheld or not is still a question that's around her official duties. So am I making myself clear? I just want to flag that I think it's an issue that we have sort of maybe a fundamental disagreement internally. I also realize it's a legal question, and so, I'm not the lawyer here, and none of us lawyers are lawyers for this agency, but I would really like to flesh it out at some point, maybe when it comes up for when we're doing roles.
Just to elaborate on that a little bit in the way that Mr. Tina described it, the other way of looking at this is that this opinion concludes that it would be an ethics violation and a gift for agency resources to go towards outside counsel to do a public records review. The corollary of that would be that it would also be a gift if public funds were put towards use of in-house counsel to do that review, and I think that's an erroneous result. That latter part, not the way this opinion was written, because I think the circumstances here, again, I think this opinion is right, but that's my concern, just to put a finer point on it, I think we should, as a commission, at some point have a discussion about use of in-house counsel. When is it appropriate? When is it inappropriate? And would it get through?
Well, and I don't think that's necessarily the corollary on this, because this counsel was representing the agency on a public records request, as we all do.
Right.
Whether it's a personal, like I'm thinking now, like for instance, Sylvia Hayes, she didn't use the governor's counsel to pursue her own interest on whether she should release public records, and she was fighting that they were personal. And so this is a really limited, as you've noticed, that this is a very limited. And the only other thing I would point out on this, and I agree we need to flesh it out, is there is a case that talks about whether the person argued that they should have coverage of the tort on an ethics claim. And the court said, that's a personal thing, and you don't get tort coverage on that. So there is a case on that. That doesn't cover the whole universe, but there is on that in particular.
And I know we keep talking about gift, but this was analyzing the use of office.
Use of office.
So, it's not only the
same
gift.
Same thing.
It would be money flowing from the public body, so we would look at it as use of office,
because we don't look at gifts coming from the public body.
I misspoke, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, Chair.
Okay, very good. That brings us to review of best practices survey.
Well, as you know, Virginia sent you out the best practices survey. Got responses back. The two no's are they're not here today, so it's hard for me to know why he said no. So we might ask him at the next meeting. But somebody does not. Anyway, we need more on policy making and mission and goals. So maybe the audit will help with that issue too. Coming up more, but this is required for us to do with you folks every year, fellas, and so I appreciate you guys. This was the correlation, but like I said, I can't tell you why they want to know because they're not here.
Okay. But everybody responded to it?
We had six responses out of nine.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So when you're ready, I have a partially related comment, but maybe not quite on point, so I will wait and see if you have
any. Let's go for it.
It's not a best practice per se, but one of the questions that I sometimes have coming to a meeting is what progress we need to continue to be making to update our administrative rules in several regards, and that don't mean to imply that the staff doesn't have enough work to do, because if the staff does have a lot of work to do and the legislature added to the workload in a couple of respects at least. But we have administrative rule issues relating to the penalty matrix. We have administrative rule issues relating to what it means to engage in ex parte contact. No particular pressure to get those done at a certain moment in time, but maybe others I failed to mention in this list. But I think updating our own administrative rules is a decent thing to talk about sometime.
I think it's a fair issue. I mean, it seems to be put on the back burner for other things that come about, and
which is understandable.
That's a fair comment, and we can certainly try to bring that up
That's something you've brought up before.
Well, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. I think that the one that makes the most difference to me from a big picture standpoint is the penalty matrix administrative rule relative to what we've been through in the last year or two.
Yeah.
The one that has a personal issue for me is the ex parte contact rule, which as a one person in Salem, the character of that language makes my life difficult if I try to observe it 100%. But I may misunderstand the definition of ex parte contact. I say to Ms. Alpaw. So anyway, we don't need to discuss in detail, but please.
Ron is not going to like me for this, but you are supposed to review them. I mean,
yeah, I look at them every year.
Good timing.
Never miss.
Way to go. You comply with your counsel. Way to go. No, enough said, Mr. Chair. I think those are issues that, you know,
there's going to be some new rules come up.
Just sure, there'll be new ones.
Because these statutes are coming back for us. So.
Like what to do about the sexual training harassment issues that lobbyists now have to show that they participated in or completed, if I'm saying that right or not, based on...
And presumably passed.
Well... Yeah, but I forget what bill number was, but there is a new requirement on us.
Okay.
Anyway, no.
Commissioner Alday.
While we're speaking about rules, so one of our most obvious rules, one that people use the most, is our handbook. I understand we're to review that periodically. Ron, can you remind me when we're going to be looking at the public official's guide?
It's all right now. I mean, we're actually writing a new version at this time. So it's just part of my report is we're come Monday we'll be up to full staff again.
Great.
And so, you know, we've had to, like Diane has had to basically be an investigator here for a while. And you can see how many cases have come before you in the last couple of meetings just trying to get through that. By being down one, so sometimes we have to move some resources around. But we have a very capable person starting on Monday that should hit the ground running pretty quickly, like Susan did. So we hope to have a little bit more time to kind of shore up some of those things. But we do have staff working on that in the lobby guide, also trying to get those updated.
What's the new investigator's name?
Lisa.
Lisa. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah,
very good. You've
taken all of my good stuff out of the record. Yeah, that's okay.
Okay, so are we done with this item?
Yeah.
I guess we'll go to trainer's report.
Chair Burke, Commissioners, Trainer Tammy Hedrick giving the report. You have what we've recently completed and what's coming up on the agenda. And sometimes when it rains, it pours. In the last 2 days, I've gotten 4 requests from 4 distinctly different public entities such as the Public Defense Services Commission, the Psychiatric Security Review Board, the Eastern Oregon Regional Solutions Coordinators, specifically their border board.
Yeah.
So these are entities I've never heard of before that have sought out our services to have training specifically mostly for the board's members themselves, but as we always do, we ask them to bring staff and any supports or advisory committee members that also participate or support them to attend. And in as much as this one happens to be in La Grande, Oregon, it puts us in a position to pick up some other trainings, which we've been in contact with one of our fire districts over there. And it's difficult to travel that far when you're looking at a training of potentially only 7 or 8 individuals. But with that being said, we're going to take this opportunity to pick up those smaller entities as we go that direction. So, again, a benefit to that. The other piece to the training is we've talked to you in the past about how we've kind of created this opportunity to step into the state forum of providing direct training to individuals that would work for a large state entity. Oregon Health Association is one of them. We do their new employee onboarding.
We are now in discussions with the Oregon State Hospital to provide that as well. And one of the reasons they contacted our office was to talk about the types of training that employees get on that level, where they receive personal certifications. That's where the discussion opened up. It was a general inquiry with me about how do we handle this when an employee receives a certification through the training that we pay for, which then goes to that individual. Can they then go out and engage in private income producing opportunities utilizing that certificate? So that's how the discussion started. And of course, we always talk about, do you have policies that would restrict it? No, we really don't, because we've never thought about how this can affect us. But what's happening is they're finding that a lot of employees have already been engaging in that entrepreneurial activity. So through that, we discussed just as direct training. However, when you talk about the number of employees at the Oregon State Hospital, one challenge would be getting them all together. Two is that they distinctively do different things within that state organization. So we are now in talks with them to, on a quarterly basis, do and provide training for their staff, both on the new employee onboarding aspect, but more importantly for those employees that already have those certificates and are challenged with knowing how these particular laws would affect them while they act as a representative of the hospital and how to navigate those waters. So again, a really unique opportunity for us to kind of get in the door and be able to be in an ongoing basis for an organization that large with those types of challenges. So again, another opportunity that I think we're just going to continue to move forward with and hopefully get more, not just state entities, but other public entities to give us the opportunity to provide that training, because as Commissioner O'Day knows, the carrot and stick sometimes works, but the reality of what we do is that it's a personal liability, and it's always a challenge to get an employer to give us their employees for even an hour to get training that just personally affects them. So again, just a mm-hmm. great movement forward in kind of that mission of what our agency has been, you know, what we do is educate so they don't come before you in the form of a complaint.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to thank Tammy. She expressed a willingness to repeat her appearance at Western Liberty Network's annual conference on February 1st of next year. She was a big hit this year, and according to the evaluation forms we got back. So thank you for that.
Mr. Chair, I got a quick question for Tammy. Just crossed my mind. Mm-hmm. As a curiosity, if not motivated by earlier discussions today, have the legislative caucuses ever asked the commission for training behind the scenes on ethics law in Oregon?
So, excellent question, Commissioner Bissam. They did not ask, but I went out and offered the training, because what we receive is a first line of contact is usually their staff. And so what I did is I contacted them and said, let us provide training, and I was advised that they do that in-house. I did get in on one occasion to attend a staff meeting. It was 2 years ago. I have not been invited back, but I always extend the opportunity to come provide that training, because those staff change as well. But they advised me that they do their own training.
And that represents a source of concern for me, because I'll bet you $10 that those people don't know anything near what you know about ethics law in Oregon and how it might or might not apply to themselves as employees, but also to the elected officials. So that's, I would love for there to be a way to go around them, and that's not your job. Maybe it's our job in some way, but I think that would be really effective training for you and your colleagues to provide to the caucuses.
Well, I definitely think it's a great opportunity. It opened my mind and jotted down some notes, some ways to kind of, I'll coordinate with Diane, of course, Director Burson, on kind of what we could do to move forward, even if it's just sending something to them.
Yeah. Thank you.
I will say in the past, we have trained legislators. It's not normally in the caucuses, but I know new legislators that come on, there's a training before they start. We have been in the caucus rooms in the past. I'll tell you, I was in there for SEI training years ago, but it's been a lot of years as far as in the caucus rooms training. But we have had, I remember a training after Senate Bill 10 passed that Lynn and I did. I still remember, gosh, what was her name? You know, one of the legislators asked on the relatives and members of household when they put that on the FBI, said, who did that? And Lynn said, you did. I still remember that. It was Margaret Carter is in the room. So I thought that was always kind of funny. It's like, well, who put that in there? Well, you did. You voted for it. So we try to get in there. And I think that having the Senate Minority Leader in here today, it might be a little easier to get ourselves in the room. So.
And I only mentioned the caucuses as one way to deal with all legislators. If you do it in a certain rhythms of a legislative session, it'll be more effective than other times. So anyway, thank you.
Okay, Executive Director's report. If you have anything left.
Is there anything on?
Yeah. So I put this in here. This is the latest. Greatest after month 13 came out. We actually saved last biennium $194,951,000, which is about a 7.5% of our budget. So we did a really good job last year as far as like managing the budget. I will, however, say that those savings that we have will probably be needed for this biennium.
Mm-hmm.
Amy costs a lot more money now, so it's all for
yeah, Amy, it's worth it.
Let's just say the flat rate went up just a little bit. But, so in February, I think they're going to, as a wider thing than just us, they're going to make some action in there to raise the limitation for the AG's office in the February session. But instead of us having to go out to the general fund to try to get money or raise our assessments in some way, we have the savings to be able to absorb this cost, which is a whole lot easier than doing those other two things. So I'm pretty proud of the work that was done this last session. We ended up doubling our amount to the general fund, thanks in part to former Governor Kitzhaber, but we added a whole $60,000 to the general fund, so I'm sure they're pretty flush now.
Problem solved.
We are one of the agencies. You might have saw the DAS performance audit that came out, and there were some concerns about spending money at the end of the biennium as opposed to the beginning of the biennium. I will tell you that we are one of the agencies that spend at the end of the biennium, and the reason we do that is that we really don't know if we have a surplus till it gets towards the end. And if you're never funded at 100%, if you spend at the beginning of the biennium, the only way for me to really save money and make that up is people have to go home. And I just refuse to do that until I'm pretty confident that we have the funds to cover it. And you can see, and I think Das said in the audit too, was the things that are being purchased with those monies are all things that are needed for the agency, so that we're not finding Ferraris or, you know, what was it in the paper today? Portland had $1,123 hotel room.
One evening.
Yeah.
Well,
yes. Yeah. City of Portland staff.
There was actually three nights they stayed, so it was like $3,000-some. Yeah. So,
wow.
So we're not doing that, but I am one of those problems in the audit, and that's just the way I manage this agency, so maybe it's really old school. But
you know, in Dubai, they have Lamborghinis for the police cars in Dubai.
I'd be a police officer then.
That's right.
So we're still working on it. I gave you the month 13. That's the end of the biennium. That's all the expenditures for this. We should have a July actuals coming out here soon. So as I said earlier, that all 2019 SEI filers are actually filed this
year. That's a big deal.
And it really is. We continue to work on the previous years, as you kind of see in them kind of come forward to you as we work stuff out with those folks. So we did complete the recruitment for the Compliance Specialist 2. Her name is Lisa Kristen. She is a former Assistant District Attorney, is that what you call them, folks? Yeah. From Lane County. She talked to her great lengths about the drive from Eugene, but she is more than happy to do that. This is so we're really pleased. We actually had a couple candidates at the end. I think we would have done well with either one of them, but this one I'm excited to have her come on. I think, like I say, she can hit the ground running. Was very impressive in the interviews. So, looking forward to that. Closing screen start till Monday, so you'll see her at the next meeting. So we're still learning Workday. We find out how hard it is to get somebody onboarded. It used to be so much easier to hire somebody. You just got to call them and say, hey, you got the job, and this is how much we're going to pay you. Now it's you got to go through the HR system, and it's a bit cumbersome, but we're getting better at it. We're able to get it done. So lobbyists, you can see very few lobbyists and clients. Best practices was done. I want to talk just a bit about this delegation that came in. We've been seeing a lot of these delegations, and I think that the word keeps kind of traveling around between the different, because anyway, these folks wanted to come see us from Indonesia, and so we spent, a couple hours with them, probably, talking about the programs here. It was very interesting because this was a delegation of women in government, and I had a lady sitting next to me, and she actually had three phones, and I said, geez, you know, three phones, you know, it's like, I could barely do like one or two, and found out that she was the first elected woman in Indonesia in this position that she has. And so, very impressive group of folks. I got a kick out of them because Tammy and Monica were doing the presentation, and all of a sudden, as soon as they left that little opening and asked if there was a question, we probably went an hour on questions. But, you know, in their culture, they don't want to interrupt you. But as soon as that was open, boy, it was very interesting to have these folks come talk to us. They were talking about the problems they have in government and the corruption and the just trying to kind of get all that, you know, bad money out of government. And so anyway, we enjoyed the day with them. We already talked about the state's audit division. You saw that they came in doing a performance audit. We'll keep you informed on how that's going. I'm sure that you're going to be contacted to talk with them. I know the staff, we've already gone through first rounds with talking to them about what we do here. If you don't get contacted and you want to participate in it, I'm sure we can get you a number and get a hold of the folks that you can be part of that. So, yeah, it's kind of exciting. So I'm sure at the end of that, they will give us some suggestions on maybe how we can change some of the laws, maybe some of the ones we were talking about today, ways we can improve our service. I got a kick out of one of the questions to one of the employees was, have you ever thought about kind of farming out the phone call thing? Because somebody, one of the people had said, like, what's the best thing you do? And one of the employees had said, our customer service, like, we actually answer the phone, and we kind of take pride in doing that. And so I think another person said, has there been a suggestion like farming that out to some other place? And I just like, no, because I mean, that's one of the things that serves me great in the legislature, especially in our budget time, that somebody can call over here and they get a hold of somebody. All this advice here that comes in, we'll respond to that right away, that you see how much work they went into all those letters and learning all those different processes and stuff. And so it's like, no. So I'm hoping that doesn't come out that, hey, you can save money if they get a phone service. I'd rather not save the money. I think
exactly.
I don't know about you, but it always frustrates me when I try to call somebody and I have to go through a phone tree and a phone tree and a phone tree.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
It's like technical support.
I'm not really going to stop that. I just was kind of curious about the transition of questions and employees. And lastly, look, I have the next meeting on the 3rd. It is a Thursday. I believe somebody asked for that. I don't know if they were here today that asked for it. There seems to be some.
I asked for the Valentine's Day.
But that was on next year's stuff. This would have been last year.
Can't remember.
It could have even been Kamala, but we have the room on the 3rd. It's scheduled for the 3rd, and so I would prefer to keep it on the 3rd because the Friday, there's another agency in this room.
Okay, so ignore the packet that says October 4th. It's going to be on October 3rd.
Yeah, and we will
update all of our other places. Okay. And there is no meeting room available on the 4th any longer, so...
Yeah,
I
say it may be somebody that's not here today that had asked for it, not this last time, but the year before, to change that. I know it wasn't me because it's right in the middle of deer season, so I'm going to actually come back for the meeting and then I'm going to go back across.
Poor deer. They've been Bambi again, huh?
Yeah, they're living on my land. It's kind of cool to say that.
Soon they'll be dying on your land.
Well, maybe. Yeah, we'll let them grow up to be old, though, before they do
who's
that.
Who's in coaching on whose land again?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's my land or not. It's probably their land. But,
anybody ever seen that little video on YouTube, Godzilla versus Bambi? It's real. Look it up. YouTube. Yeah.
So I am through with my report. If anybody has any questions, not.
Okay.
I'll see you on the 3rd if I don't see you beforehand.
That is it. Without objection, we will adjourn this excellent meeting. So
and
thank you all.
If somebody from the State Farm Division get a hold of you, it's real. It's not a scam or something.
Speaking of excellent, Bill and Ted are making a third movie.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Mm-hmm.